You are listening to the podcast number 207, Punk News Podcast. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We got a super packed episode on tonight's podcast. But before we even get into that, before we get into all the hot stories we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about the Dwarves. We're going to be talking about Rise Against. We're going to be talking about Pussy Riot. We're going to be talking about War on Women signing with Bridge Nine. We're going to be talking about Boots Riley publishing his screenplay. We're going to be talking about Search for a Cure being robbed in Virginia Beach. We're going to be talking about Casey Anderson stealing from the West Memphis 3. We're going to be talking about Ice Age. We're going to be talking about the Misfits and Jello Biafra being added to the Barbecue Fest. And we're going to be talking about everyone's favorite crooner, Morrissey. But before we get into that, let's see who we got on the podcast tonight. With me here tonight is interviewer Chris Barrett. Chris Barrett, what's happening? What's happening in big NYC?
What's happening? It's a lovely, cool summer in NYC, you know. And John, I don't know if you know, but I have recently been hired as a teacher.
Well, congratulations, so, Chris. When do you start that?
I start that the first day of school. First day of school, September 4th.
So what are you doing? So you got all of August off, basically. What are you doing in August? How are you chilling out in August?
I got some side jobs here and there, a little beach day here and there. I got some family up here and there, you know, a little mix. Somehow every day stays busy, so it's good, you know?
You have to, like, put together, like, a crazy amount of lesson plans and stuff?
I'm sort of dreading that, but it's part of the job. So, I'll have to do that. Math and ELA. I'll have to learn math again.
So when you walk in there, you're going to be like, all right, kids, I'm not taking any shit from any of you. Sit down, shut up, and do your lesson plans.
I plan on immediately walking in and throwing a desk at a wall to show that I am not one to be fucked with.
Are they going to call you Mr. Barrett? Are they going to call you Mr. B? Are they going to call you Chris? What are they going to call you?
I think I'm into Mr. B. I like keeping it simple. Because, so if it's not monosyllabic, then I don't know if they'll get it.
You teach a special education or special needs children, right?
Yes, I will be.
Now, is that children with mental difficulties or is that children with just general difficulties? I remember in my elementary school, they put the kids with mental challenges with kids that come from, like, really poor backgrounds that just hadn't been given, like, a proper education at all. So they were, like, way behind, not because of learning difficulties, just because, like, no one had ever taught them, like, their ABCs or whatever. Which always seems strange to me because it seems to be the same solution for a different problem.
I believe it's emotional disturbance.
Oh, so that's actually kind of heavy-duty stuff, man.
Well, trying to do good things. So,
good for you, Chris. You are a saint walking on earth.
I'm not going to throw the desk against the wall. I'm going to pet them and tell them it's okay. I'm here for you.
You're going to pet them? You're going to dehumanize them?
Yes, I'm going to dehumanize them.
And also with us here is Mark Little down outside of Miami. Mark Little, what's it like down in Miami? Chris B says, Mr. B says it's nice and cool up in NYC. How hot is it down there in Florida?
It is wicked hot down here in Florida. And it's also seriously rainy down here in Florida.
Do you have your headphones in?
I do.
Okay. I was getting some feedback for a second there.
Yeah, so was I for a second. And also, just to make you really jealous for a second, John, in about 3 weeks, I'm going to go see Off with Dale Crover playing drums down here in Miami.
Well, that's all. You know, I think that's going to be an awesome show. I might actually drive down to D.C. to see it. It's like a 2.5-hour drive, like $30 in tolls, which is crazy. Or actually, no, like $40 in tolls both ways.
Damn.
I might go see it. That's going to be an awesome, awesome show. So have fun at that.
Do you have any idea why Mario's not going to be playing with them on this tour? Is he just taking a break, or is there something going on?
I have no inside information at all, but I think he's just taking a break. Maybe he's having a kid, or you know, maybe he just can't go for you know any number of reasons. You know, but I think the band is still cool because as of like yesterday, they were like saying like they put up a post like "Happy Birthday Mario" or something. So if you were kicking a guy out of a band, you wouldn't like do that post. You know.
True. And also your favorite band, the Melvins, will be down here in November.
Yeah, they're actually not coming up to the East Coast, which I'm really bummed about that, because that's actually going to be a special tour. That's Buzz Osborne, Dale Crover, and Pincus from
Butthole Surfers. Yeah.
I saw a modified version of that lineup. I saw the true two-drummer lineup with that. So it was Osborne, Pincus, Crover, and Cody Willis on drums. Yeah, Cody Willis on drums, Dale Crover, Jeff Pincus, and Buzz Osborne. But you're seeing a three-piece, which would be pretty – the three-piece Melvin and four-piece Melvin are actually pretty different.
Yeah, and actually this is the first time I've seen the Melvins in almost 20 years, so I'm pretty excited about this. And they're playing just down the street from me, so this is going to be awesome.
Well, that's going to be a blast. Well, have fun, Mark. In the meantime, we got some mail for some readers. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Let's say we got – oh, here, this is from – let's see here. This is from Kyle. Kyle says – I start out by saying this is my first time writing in, and I've been listening since episode one. Well, thank you, Kyle. I love what you guys do on the podcast, and it's influenced me to start my own music talk show on college radio station 2 years ago. Well, that's awesome, Kyle. I've recently been digging all the vinyl talk that's been kicking off a lot of the episodes, so I have a question for y'all centered around that. In your opinion, what are some of the essential records to own on vinyl? You know, like records that are enhanced by hearing them on the vinyl format. If there are any punk records that fit that criteria, that would be even better to know. And he also says, also, where's Punk Points? What happens to that? What happened to that from Kyle? Punk's Points is the game show we play every once in a while. I'm actually going to bring back episode 3 of Punk's Points probably in about 3 weeks. So, Kyle, if you want to be on that, just let me know.
And I was the first winner on Punk's Points. Thank you very much.
That's right. You were. You did play on Punk's Points. So Punk's Points is great. But, guys, with Kyle's question, what are some records you got to have on vinyl, not CD, not MP3?
I would say Minor Threat for sure.
Really? See, I like Minor Threat on CD because all the songs are so short, and like you have every single song on the one album.
Yeah, the complete discography CD. Well, I mean, if you get the Out of Step 12-inch and you get the first two 7-inches 12-inch, you pretty much have just about most of it anyway, so... You know, it's not, I mean, my thing is that if it's older, if it's something from, you know, the mid to early 80s and earlier, there's something different about that listen on vinyl, like it's meant to be listened on vinyl as opposed to CD. So I'd say anything classic that we would consider, you could run through a list of them. That's how I feel.
I agree. I totally agree. I also got to say SST. I mean, I'm a total fan of the SST stuff and the Minutemen. You can get anything by the Minutemen on vinyl. That's definitely the way it should be heard. And to get a little bit more, I don't know, closer to the 21st century, Flaming Lips. Flaming Lips put out some really great stuff. And from the Salt Bulletin on vinyl, I think sounds awesome.
Yeah, actually, SST is a good point because a lot of the Minutemen album actually have more songs on the vinyl, especially Double Nickels on the Dime. It's got like 6 or 7 extra songs. Plus, I mean, Double Nickels on the Dime is a really long album, so it helps to have those breaks, you know? Also, you're right about SST. Some of the SST CDs sound really good, and some of them just sound like crap. I think like Damaged sounds the same on CD and record or vinyl. But Slip It In, I had Slip It In on CD for a long time. I'm like, yeah, this is pretty good. But then I got it on vinyl. I got an original press on vinyl, and I think actually some of the SST Black Flags the original press is better sounding than the later day presses. Black Flag's Slip It In sounds so much more vibrant on vinyl than it does CD. Like, the CD has it like that 80s thing where some CDs have, where it sounds like it's behind like a layer of plastic. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely.
The music is
well, like... They had to redo it because that was such a new technology at that time.
Yeah, well, there you go. So I would recommend Slip It In on vinyl. But I would also say is, I think a lot of punk rock fans kind of miss out on this, is Dollar Bin, baby. Dollar Bin. Johnny G loves the Dollar Bin. I've gotten probably 100 soul records of the Dollar Bin. Soul classics. You know, stuff like Marvin Gaye, The Temptations, stuff like, The OJs. The OJs Backstabbers. One of the greatest albums of all time. You can get that for a dollar. Sometimes you get Parliament Funkadelic for a dollar. And also you can get like classic rock records. Every Billy Joel record you can get for a dollar, you know. Sometimes Led Zeppelin, you know. A lot of Blue Oyster Cult you can get for a dollar. A lot of Rolling Stones for a dollar. Sometimes you get AC/DC for a dollar. Listen,
but, you know, right there, that's when Chris brought up a really great point when he was saying it, was that like all that older stuff is, I mean, that's, it was made to be on vinyl. This new technology wasn't even thought of at that time. So it was all made to be listened to on that format. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I picked up the complete, well, I don't want to say complete Police discography, but I picked up like first five Police albums on vinyl.
Well, there's only five Police albums.
Yeah, well, okay. This is a Freudian slip.
Educated, son.
Yeah.
Although you were technically right, because the Police have a lot of B-sides. Yeah. So you said I picked up the Police discography, but then you corrected yourself and you said the first five Police albums. Because really, there's a six album worth of B-sides by the Police, plus three live albums.
I mean, if you consider Sting a continuation, but a lot of people don't, so whatever. But, I mean, it sounds fantastic on my turntable. And I definitely enjoy listening on vinyl. Definitely worth... I totally agree with you, John. Picking up any classic, it's kind of a gateway to classic music. I don't think you can appreciate it on CD because you're complaining. You know, you'll sit and you'll think, oh man, you know, this is a different quality, it's a different time. If they remaster it, it kind of takes away from it. So to pick an older album up on vinyl the way it was kind of meant to be sold at the time, you could truly appreciate it, even if you didn't appreciate it when you were younger.
Well, I have to slightly disagree with you guys. I do enjoy, sometimes remasters or like, deluxe editions. I like Elton John's got a lot of awesome deluxe editions. I'm trying to think, the Ramones deluxe editions are sure. So fantastic. So sometimes the deluxe edition is great, sometimes it's not as great. So there you go. We got some more email. This is from Jason. Here's what Jason said. I don't have a turntable. I just buy CDs off Amazon. Well, thank you, Jason. Let's see what else we got here. A little while ago on the podcast, we asked people to send in their dream Ramones cover band lineup. While I read these emails, why don't you guys think about your dream Ramones cover band lineup? This is from Jesse. Here's what Jesse said. On the previous podcast, John Gentile challenged listeners to come up with the best Ramones tribute band they could. And I gotta say, assembling my potential group was a lot of fun. Drums, Bill Stevenson, easily one of the hardest hitting, experienced, and cool punk musicians, he would be perfect behind the kit. From the Descendants and Black Flag to Only Crime and Lemonheads, he keeps the calamitous thunder pounding under any and every circumstance. Just imagine him playing Beat on the Brat or Commando. There isn't anyone else I can imagine doing drums for the Ramones cover. Then he put for bass, Mike Watt. Daring but good choice. Any bass player who was handpicked by Iggy Pop, the godfather of punk rock, to play in the only band who could contend with an influential force of the Ramones, more than deserves a spot. Then he says, on guitar, another interesting choice, Doyle. Anyone who has ever seen Doyle perform knows why his selection is a no-brainer. One listen to any of his work with the Misfits is the best proof there is. He doesn't play guitar. He beats it into submission song after song. Clearly influenced by Johnny, I'm positive that even the man himself would approve of Doyle's selection. And then his vocalist was very interesting, but actually has precedent. Vocals. Jesse Michaels. Who else could emulate punk rock's perennial yelper better than Jesse Michaels? From Operation Ivy to Kamen Rider to Classics of Love, his own patented yelp has been honed to perfection. Not only that, he can croon with the best of them. He could shout out 53rd and 3rd and just as easily croon Danny Says. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. Keep the faith. Signed, Jesse. And actually, Jesse's selection of Jesse Michaels is a... Oh, I wanted to make sure that wasn't actually Jesse Michaels emailing us. It wasn't. There actually is a bootleg Operation Ivy Ramones EP. It's them doing five or six Ramones songs live. Sound quality's not that great, but so the Jesse Michaels selection does have some precedent. Do you guys have an idea of a dream Ramones lineup, cover band lineup?
Mark, you want to go first?
Yeah, I was trying to think about that while he was reading. That was a great email.
And you know, let's keep this going. If you have an idea for a Dream Ramones cover band lineup, email to us at podcast@punknews.org. You guys think about it. If we have time at the end of the podcast, we'll circle back around to it. And if not, we'll hit it up next week. Who's got a song for us to play on the podcast before we come back and start the news?
I did this week. It's a song from a band called Earworms. They're out here in Brooklyn. They've recently put out an LP with Dead Broke Records. That's Mike D from Iron Sheik's label. And
sorry, Chris, but there's only one Mike D, and he's in the Beastie Boys.
All right. Yeah. So Mike from Long Island, Iron Sheik.
D-E-E.
Yes. It's, you know, great kind of, I don't know how to put it. I know it would be up your alley, John, that's for sure. Just kind of, you know, ex-members of iFarm and Man Without Plans. So very technical, three-piece, sounds bigger than what it is. Definitely a good change of speed. So I think the listeners will enjoy it.
And this is Earworms. Punk News Podcast. Let's get the news started. First of all, I was super excited to basically handle this. I was incredibly excited to debut this. At punknews.org, we debuted the brand new Dwarves album called The Dwarves Invented Rock and Roll. It's out August 29 on Recess and Greedy Records. Although, actually, I think it's going to be shipping way before that. It might even be in stores before that. Dwarves were one of my favorite bands. I thought this new album was fantastic. What did you guys think of this new record?
I think it was had some pretty good energy, you know, good change of speeds. You know, seemed pretty Dwarves to me. I mean, have they, you know, John, you know better than I do. Have they strayed too far from their usual formula?
Well, actually, this record was particularly interesting for me, and here's why. Two records ago, They did kind of like the last record, I guess if you could say, of their original run, which is The Dwarves Must Die. And that was their most experimental record to date. It had like hip-hop, techno, all these weird tracks. I liked it a lot. Then they didn't put out an album for about 7 years, I guess. And then they came back with The Dwarves Are Born Again. And I really, really, really like that record, because that record was a more conventional Dwarves record, but it was 18 tracks and it was very expansive. And it was basically a showing of all the things that Dwarves can do. Hardcore, pop, in between, silly songs, mean songs, you know. It was basically an encapsulation of everything Dwarves have done so far. That record, I think that record might even be like an hour long, or almost an hour long, maybe like 50 minutes. I really like this record because this record is kind of like a reaction to that. This record is really, I think it's only like 25 minutes or something. And instead of them like doing all the things they do, they really focus on two of their aspects. They do their really hardcore, nasty aspect, and they do their super poppy songs. And I thought this record was not not a display of everything the Dwarves can do, like their last record was. It was what the Dwarves do the very best. And honestly, I didn't think they would be able to pop the last record because the last record was so good. But man, this record really surprised me at how good it is. I love how hardcore the hardcore songs are. And the poppy songs are great. And it's funny. Like, song like Sluts of the USA is a really, really funny song.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
And then what else? Get Up and Get High with Me, which is just like a nasty hardcore song. I am digging this record, man.
Get Up and Get High with Me actually was the highlight of what I've heard so far, and that's about as far through the records I've gotten, which is, for people that haven't heard it, that's about halfway through, maybe just a little bit more. One really low point, I thought, and I think it was the third or fourth track, Trailer Trash, which I just thought was just blah, absolutely boring. But the beginning of the record really kind of starts off really, really kind of aggressive and really angry, which is what I really like from the Dwarves. It makes you think about what the Dwarves were 20 years ago or something like that. I'm not as into the poppy stuff that I've heard so far, but like I said, I haven't heard the full record yet. But it's been a fun record for the most part, what I've heard.
Well, I'm digging it. I'm super glad that I just love it. Like when veteran bands like come back. I mean, the Dwarves have been around basically for the past 3 years, you know, more or less. But I love it when veteran bands just come back and put out a kick-ass record. So many veteran bands, like, just, you know, it's like, oh, it's another record by so and so. Like, I'll talk about a band that I'm not going to hurt. Like Rush. I'm a huge Rush fan, but for the past 25 years, Rush have not put out a good album, you know, and so. When another Rush album comes out, I was like, eh, whatever. But this Dwarves album is kicking my ass, so I'm so glad.
Does Rush have to put out a good album for their fans to continue to come out?
I mean, they don't. But if you go see Rush Live, like, when they play their old stuff, it's awesome. But they play, like, I think the only people that like Rush's, like, stuff from the 80s and 90s and 2000s are the three guys in Rush. And they play, like, 60% of their concert that, and it's just really not that great. I don't know why this turned into the Hate Rush podcast. Anyway,
So John, if you went to a Dwarf show tomorrow and they played almost nothing but the new record or the last two records, would you be happy with that?
Yeah, I'd love it. Yeah. I mean, I've seen Dwarves like 6 or 7 times now. And actually, Dwarves usually do a pretty different set list from tour to tour. But they have a certain number of classics they always play. But if they just play this record, I'd love it, man. I'm actually in danger of over-listening to this record. I've had this record about a month now. More like 2 weeks. Yeah, I've had this like 2 weeks now. And I've probably listened to it like over 20 times. So I'm in danger of over-listening to this record. So I would love to see this stuff live, man.
Uh-oh, got to slow it down there.
I know. Tell me about it. Speaking of bands that are slowing it down, Rise Against have put out a new music video. The video is for the song I Don't Want to Be Here Anymore, and it's off their brand new album, Black Market, which we reviewed at Punk News. Reviewer Max gave it 5 out of 10, or 2.5 stars out of 5. Did you guys like the album? Did you like this video? Are you guys Rise Against fans?
Okay. I guess I'll preface it with I was a Rise Against fan in the sense that the first two albums I love. I mean, even between the first and second album, there was a change. You could see where they were going. Because the first album, they had, you know, Dan Precision in it. And it was just kind of like in your face, and then they slowed down a little bit. But then there was a ton of, you know, really fast, short kind of bursts. And then the second album was just kind of fast and, you know, kind of good mix. And I felt like a complete album. And then from there, when they signed a major, of course, they signed a major, sound really changed a lot. It kind of kept what kind of message they were going for, kind of, you know, the fringe of the political spectrum, if you put it for mainstream. But the music itself is not anything revolutionary, pun intended. So I feel like they've been doing kind of the same formula for past few albums. I haven't really listened to this album, though. I did check out the video. The video's message, I mean, I've seen, you know, I feel like it's a rehash of stuff that, like, Rage Against the Machine used to do and other politically active bands. And they kind of named, you know, stats and kind of brought it to the present day, which will kind of become dated as time goes on. So the video's kind of dated as well. The song's all right. But I haven't really cared about their stuff too much, even though their central message is generally remained the same. It's, you know, they've expanded their fan base with the kind of watering down of their sound for over a period of time. So, I mean, it's just kind of a continuation of what has been going on for the past about 10 years now.
You know, that's a really good point that you brought up about comparing this video to Rage Against the Machine, because it wasn't until you just said it right then that reminded me that, yeah, it's very much like I think the video was for Freedom, where you would see the interstitial footage of the little quotes and the news footage and things like that.
Yep.
And I thought the video was, honestly, I just thought the video was boring. And when you said that, I knew that I had seen it before. And the song, I haven't heard the record at all, so I don't know about the 2.5-star rating. But I liked Rise Against a lot with the first two records, the first three records even. And I don't know if it got watered down. I don't know if I just got bored with them. But this song sounds almost exactly what I've heard on the last two or three Rise Against records. And that's not to say it's good or bad, but it just it doesn't give the same effect to me that it did 10 years ago, I guess, which is either me getting older or them getting more boring, or maybe a combination of the two.
I mean, I just feel like they went from, you know, more of a mainstream sound. And, you know, there are bands where I've liked they've gone for mainstream. Like,
Name one.
Okay, I'll get flamed. I like the Kings of Leon mainstream sound. You know, I like their albums. So, yeah, flame me. But, I mean, I enjoy that. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't have the same expectation for that band as I did, like, when you listen to their first two Rise Against records, and then it kind of goes on. You know, some people are like, oh, Cyrus Song's good. Like, I liked half of it. Some people are like, oh, Suffer Witness is great. And I kind of like some of it. But it just, as, you know, as it's went on, their fan base has grown more and more. They've had more of a sound that appeals to more people. And for them, personally for me, it hasn't really worked out, you know, in terms of, like, keeping me interested. So I haven't really given, you know, a whole lot of time other than an occasional listen to their last few albums. So, I mean, whatever. That's how I felt about it.
Yeah, it seems that a lot of people feel that way. I never really was a huge Rise Against fan to begin with. I was confusing with Anti-Flag, and those bands aren't really that similar, right?
No, I feel like Anti-Flag, you know, they were more about trying to, I feel like Rise Against sort of tried to bring people into, you know, their viewpoint. Anti-Flag really sang about, like, you know, like the School of Americas and CIA, Vieques, Puerto Rico. Like, they took whatever was going on at the time and kind of put it into a song. So all their albums kind of have, like, a time and date stamp to it, where I feel like Rise Against has more of a general message. And,
It's a really good point.
You know, I mean, so, I mean, for me, Anti-Flag, I should like them more than I do, but for some reason, I don't know, they just kind of, I listen, I'm like, oh, that's cool, but then I, you know, I don't know, I just feel like that there's something kind of rudimentary about them.
I feel exactly the same way.
You know, I just can't get past it. It's like, I feel like I should be in high school and pissed off at a mohawk, but I'm not.
Exactly the same way.
Well, speaking of people fighting the government, Pussy Riot, specifically two members of Pussy Riot, Nadezhda Talakhneva and Maria Alekhine, the two women that were jailed for protesting, like, a church, basically, doing, like, a one-minute-long concert in a church. They were jailed for, I think, religious hatred is what the Russian government cited them for. They did a year in jail. They got out. If you remember, while they were in jail, one of them was shipped to, like, Siberia, and they didn't tell anybody. And another one was like, forced to work in, like, a sewing machine factory for, like, 16 hours a day. Or a sewing factory, rather, for, like, 16 hours a day. It seemed pretty rough. Well, they're suing the Russian government. The kicker, I guess, is they're suing the Russian government, but not in Russian court, but rather through the European Court of Human Rights. They're alleging human rights violations, which occurred while they were in prison. the women are asking for 120,000 pounds compensation and 10,000 pounds in court fees each per both of them. They say if they win, they'll give the compensation to human rights organizations, including the own Pussy Riot Prisoner Rights Organization, NGO, and Zona Prava. So I guess the question is this. Some attorneys, international law is what they do. But let me draw a comparison. I interned at Yahoo. And while I was at Yahoo, what I did was trademark enforcement through domain names. And the reason we did that was actually to fight, like, child porn and porn in general. For example, like, Chris, let's say you do a website that says yahoo-girls.com. You know what I mean? That's obviously not done by Yahoo, but it's trademark infringement, right?
Right.
So I would file a UDRP. That's basically the domain name jurisdiction that you submit to if you have a registrar. Mm-hmm. And if they found that you were infringing upon a trademark, which obviously you are on yahoogirls.com, they would just, you know, destroy it. You know, they would actually give me the domain name, and obviously Yahoo wouldn't do anything with it, you know. The problem is when you got people in India and China and Bangladesh, a lot of those sites over there aren't part of the registrars that are part of the UDR, what do you call ICANN. ICANN is basically a international registrar agreement. So when you sue them, it doesn't matter because China doesn't care if they got people infringing upon Yahoo's trademark. Of course, they care if we are infringing upon a China trademark in USA, but China doesn't care if a trademark's being infringed upon. India doesn't care. So what we had to do is it was kind of cool is you hire these guys called takedown services, and it's almost like an internet assassin, and that they would hack into like these these Chinese or these Indian sites with child porn, but it's like Yahoo-Boys is like child porn, and basically just destroy the site by hacking into it. It's pretty cool stuff, and it was a good cause too. The reason I bring this up is the following is I don't know if the European Court of Human Rights suing Russia, I don't know if Russia cares about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of where it's two things. One is it pounds or is it euros? Because I'm reading –
what did I say? Did I say pounds? It's euros. It's definitely euros, not pounds.
And I feel like when you talk about the international court, I feel like I didn't know you could bring civil litigation through the European Court of Human Rights because it's seeking compensatory damages. I was under the impression when you go through like a human rights convention, you're talking about like Slobodan Milosevic and war crimes like through The Hague. That's what I was assuming. So if they're just suing for compensatory damages, I don't know, you know, say a judgment is – okay, so say they sue, they win. You know, is a judgment enforceable?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Does Russia care, you know?
Yeah, I don't think they do, and I don't see – you know, I see this as kind of like a solidarity cause. Like, you know, we'll show them, you know, and, you know, I agree. Look, Russia's got a lot of fucked up shit going on. And,
yeah,
you know.
I think Putin enjoys being like it's like the 80s again. Like, Russia is like becoming like this evil country. Like, you know, in the 80s, it'd be like, it's nuclear war with Russia. They're evil. But like, Russia, like the government is like becoming evil again. Maybe they always were evil. I don't know, man.
I mean, he was the head of the KGB at one point.
He was. He's a bad dude.
You know, so, I mean, I don't know. Shit.
You've seen the pictures of Putin riding a horse with his shirt off.
Or rooting on the Putin on the Ritz.
So I mean, but Chris, that does go to our point is if they win, if the European Court of Human was it European Court of Human Rights, if they say okay, you owe us 120,000 euros, Russia might just say we don't care. Now, if it was like a war crimes thing, they obviously would say, okay, we'll give you the war crime, guys, because they don't want to go to war over that, you know? But nobody's gone to war over 120 euros, you know what I mean?
Yeah, or 120,000.
That's what I mean, yeah.
You know, with the Dr. Evil pinky towards your mouth. 120 euros.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't – but
nah, I am just not good with European money, am I?
This funny money they have, I heard it's different colors and stuff.
Like, I'm in, like, Europe, and I'm like, how much is that Coke? He's like, €2. So I give him, like, 2,000. I'm like, is that right? He's like, yeah, that's right.
I just made my quota for the day, so – I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I feel like it's more of a solidarity move than anything. It's more kind of just symbolic. It's not, it's nothing other than that. That's how I feel.
exactly.
Yeah, well, speaking of War on Women, the two women from Pussy Riot, there's another War on Women going on. War on Women, the band, have signed to Bridge Nine Records. War on Women, they're going to be putting an album out in 2015, and they'll be on tour with Propagandhi and Reviver, however you want to say it.
Reviver.
War on Women is a up-and-coming band. I know Jello Biafra is a big fan. I guess they're kind of like halfway between like just punk, hardcore, and maybe even a little bit of like alt rock, you know? Are you guys a fan of this? Are you looking forward to the upcoming LP? I think they only have a demo out, or maybe an EP. It's like an EP demo. That's like the only thing they have out.
Five-song EP, 10-inch.
Yeah, but this band is really getting a lot of notice. You know, people are really into this band.
I've only heard I was checking them out a little bit before we started recording. I've only seen a video that they played. I think it was in Baltimore at the Autobar. And I saw about 15 minutes of a video they'd done, of a live video that was going on. And it seemed kind of okay. I really couldn't get a good feel for it. It seemed really screamy to me. It seemed a lot more a lot crustier than what you were just describing it right there. So I'd like to hear the recorded versions of it, actually, because
it is kind of crusty.
Yeah, the recording is pretty. It's pretty raw, and I mean, it's, you know, you could tell what you're saying. You know, there's some vocalists that kind of either scream or screech at a point where it's kind of hard to discern what they're saying. And she's pretty straightforward with what she's saying. It's very, you know, it is what the band sounds like they're about. Well, not that they're for a war on women, but just, you know, fighting sexism and misogyny and you know. The patriarchal society. So, I mean, there's no bones about it. So, you know, I wasn't blown away, but it was cool. I would definitely check them out live. Interesting note. I don't know. I didn't see a video like Mark did, but one of the dudes in the band, there's two gentlemen and three women in the band. And one of the dudes runs a pickle like stand in Baltimore, and me and Kira and my wife and her other went out and we went and bought some pickles at that place. So just cool plug for him. I forget his name. I'm sorry if I forgot your name. But,
is it the guy with the beard? Or
guy with the beard.
Yeah. How were the pickles?
It's the drummer then.
I am not a pickle connoisseur.
you're really trashing this poor guy's like, the band's all right, and his pickles suck.
my wife, Samantha, the great Samantha Barrett, loves the pickles, so she vouches for it.
I mean, are these like normal pickles? I mean, are there special pickles? I know the Jewish culture, I know like they have like all these different kinds of pickles. Is it that kind of pickle?
They had like some crazy flavors going on, off the top of my head. Like they were, you know, combining some sweet and savory, you know, they had some like, you know, hot, like habanero and stuff like that.
So, habanero pickles.
Yeah. Something.
That sounds horrible.
I mean, listen, different strokes for different folks. So, you know, I'm not a pickle connoisseur, but there's,
I like pickles.
Oh, wait, hold on. I have a jar coming my way, and it is the Old Bay and onion pickles.
See, I've never considered pickles as anything other than what came next to my burger when I used to eat burgers. I've never known they were gourmet pickles.
Some people take it very seriously. So, all right. So take those pickles seriously and take this band very seriously.
Yes.
Bridge Nine is taking them very seriously.
That's right.
Although, cool. Let me say, cool. Fried pickles, if you've never had fried pickles, now that's some shit right there. That's good stuff.
Well, speaking of good stuff, Boots Riley is publishing his screenplay. The screenplay is called Sorry to Bother You, and it's a magical realism story inspired by Riley's time working at as a telemarketer, I think back in the late 80s or mid-80s. It's a companion to the album Sorry to Bother You, which came out in 2012. I really like the album. For a while, what's his name was attached? Oh, I can't remember. Patton Oswalt was attached to this project, and I know Boots was trying to make it a movie. But it seems like if he's publishing the screenplay, they're probably not going to make it a movie, because I can't imagine publishing a screenplay and then making it a movie. But maybe they are. It's going to be out in McSweeney's Quarterly number 48 out in November. Oh, and Boots Riley is the frontman of The Coup, which is a hip-hop group that's been around about 20-some years now. And they have some crossover with punk rock. Boots Riley's in a Street Sweeper Social Club with Tom Morello. Boots Riley's toured with Jello Biafra, that kind of stuff.
Sounds good.
Are you guys Coup fans?
I know nothing about the coup.
I'm in Mark's corner.
Coup's great. The coup, they're an anarchist or communist or socialist hip hop group. That they put on one of the best live hip hop shows I've ever seen. Them, Public Enemy, KRS-One, and the Beastie Boys are the four best live hip hop shows I've ever seen. So if you get a chance, go see the coup. I think this is going to be cool. I have no idea what the story is really about, though, so I'm excited to read it. I'm definitely going to pick this up.
Let me say really quick, I did do telemarketing in the early 90s, so that alone makes me interested to check it out.
Maybe you worked with him and don't know it.
That would be, wow, he's had a very bad experience then. I really have to check out this nightmarish scenario of a record.
And although I don't know anything about the coup, I do know that because I don't know anything about them right now, now I need to go check them out because I feel like, and I've had conversations with some of my other friends about this general, like, hip-hop and rap culture, like, the mass media.
The mass media, man. Don't believe it. The mass media.
versus something like that's, like the coup, which is obvious. I don't think they're as relatively as known as, I don't know, Kanye West or whatever.
Well, no.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would be more...
Because of the mass media, man. The mass media is keeping the coup down.
Exactly.
I definitely am going to check them out because I feel like it's something more than what I feel like I would usually see associated with, general hip-hop mass media culture. It's definitely worth my time to check out.
If you're going
to
check out the coup, check out Steal This Album. It's probably their first... They've got a bunch of classics, actually. But that's one of their classics, and so is... the one with 5,000 Ways to Kill a CEO. Pick a bigger weapon.
Tell me they put out Steal This Album before System of a Down did.
I'm almost positive they did. When System of a Down put it out?
I want to say early 2000.
They put it out in like 95.
Oh, okay. We're safe. So now I know System of a Down ripped that off.
But that's from a book. There's a book called Steal This Book. It's like an anarchist book.
Well, now I just...
Well, there you go.
Now my mind's been
blown minds. Chris, you know why you don't know about that? The mass media, man. The mass media
wants to keep it down.
They don't want you to know about that.
Watch too much sports here.
But I'll tell you, this is off-the-grid stuff. This is non-mass media stuff. Mark Little, hit us with something we won't hear on the mass media.
Oh, well, I guess you want me to play a little bit of Askultura, which is a local band from down here in South Florida. And they've been around for a few years. And the first time I got to see them actually was opening up for one of our mutual favorite bands, the World Inferno Friendship Society, when they played at this small little place. It was almost like an industrial storage space. And they were great. They just blew me away. And they've got a new record out right now. It's called Inferno. And this is kind of keeping up with the World Cup vibe. I can't remember the title of it, but... Askultura right here. Qui se tape en air pour ask you, hey. Qui se tape en air pour ask you, hey. Yeah, here we come to your town. Gonna move that pit around. Qui se tape en air pour ask you, hey. Qui se tape en air pour ask you, hey. Yeah, here we come to your town. Gonna move that pit around.
Colors every day, I keep a hula again. When it's Sunday, this is your day. Can you raise your flags up high and hard on the pitch for 11? Together with a heart, I keep a hula again. When it's Sunday, this is your day. Keep your cap on every rock you hey, hey. Keep your cap on every rock you hey, hey, hey. Yeah, here we come to your town. Gotta move that thing around. Keep your cap on every rock you hey, hey. Yeah, here we come to your town. Gonna move that thing around. These emotions, they don't hide. Busting out of the bus with our flags and our scars to the stadium. You'll hear us singing, not today. No FIFA will. This is our day. Antifa hooligan, this is our day. Not today. No FIFA will. Antifa hooligan, cool as you know. Back on an air. Yannick Zepiano. Soulay. Red High. Ole, 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 ole.
Cannavaro, ahí recibe Podolski. Cannavaro, Cannavaro, ahí está balón, balón, balón para Gilardino. Gilardino con el balón, jugando la uno contra uno. Gilardino, Gilardino, del Piero.
And we are back on the Punk News Podcast with that World Cup jam. But we got to bring it down. I know we're all partying over the World Cup and Ask Who Tour and all the jacked up tunes, but we got to bring it down. Shirts for a Cure was robbed at the Warped Tour stop in Virginia Beach. Here's what the organization's Facebook had to say. This is not a post we ever thought we would have to make, but unfortunately we were robbed yesterday at the Vans Warped Tour in Virginia Beach. Anyone with information is asked to contact the authorities. For those who don't know, Our profits go directly to cancer patients in need, and so having our money stolen is a huge loss for our cause. Our donations for the summer were designed to help with our ongoing financial support of the Community Health Center in Chicago, and we do not want to let this organization down. We really need your help in replacing the funds that were tragically stolen. And I guess a lot of people don't know, but actually Virginia Beach is kind of a high-crime area. I know, like, the actual beach is kind of touristy, but parts of Virginia Beach are, like, really rough, and there's a lot of van break-ins there and a lot of robbery. Or, no, not robbery, theft in Virginia Beach.
Yeah, so I've heard, you know, that generally, I don't want to say I've heard directly. I feel like I've, you know, sort of read comments here and there, not just related here, but elsewhere, that just Virginia Beach scene is kind of some negative comments. I'll put it that way. I'll put it lightly.
What do you mean? Like, so, it's a rough area, or what do you mean?
Well, just like, you know, between the area and the scene involved there as well, like the kids that show.
Oh, you mean like the punk rock scene?
They're part of Warped Tour, so let's think about like what bands are playing Warped Tour.
When a tour will move into an area, like, yeah, the people play, like, at the concert are not like the people like around. You know, for example, like I went and saw the Rolling Stones in Hershey. That's in the middle of Pennsylvania. Like, I mean this respectfully, but it's country people out near Hershey, you know? They're not Rolling Stones fans. But for that one day, it's all Rolling Stones fans.
I think it was a combination blanket statement, I think, of both. So,
but I mean, like, people think, see, I would guess this is not an inside job. I would guess this is just somebody that saw some money, didn't even know what it was, and grabbed it. Do you think this was, like, well, not an inside job, but do you think this was a Warped Tour job Was this somebody at Warped Tour being an ass?
I mean, I at Warped Tour, I mean, they were physically there. You mean at part of the tour?
Well, like, I mean, was this a kid? Was this someone that was at Warped Tour to enjoy Warped Tour or to work at Warped Tour, or was it a local who happened to stumble on this pot of cash?
I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, but all I know is that, you know, it's a good cause. I bought several shirts, you know, for this cause as well. You know, they sponsor a lot of, you know, events around New York, Philadelphia, and other areas too. And obviously, they've been part of Warped Tour for a while. You know, it's really shitty. You know, and I don't want to, you know, say really horrible negative things about whoever, but just like, come on, you know, out of all.
Well, you're speaking vague here. Like, what do you mean about whoever?
Whoever was responsible.
Well, why wouldn't you speak negative things about them? If somebody stole, I'd be like, that guy's a bastard.
If you're
stealing from cancer patients, that's like the lowest of the low.
I will rephrase that. I guess I won't say, oh, they should die a horrible, you know, fiery death of sorts, but just, you know, it's fucked up. I mean, what else could you really say about it? It's fucked up. Shouldn't have taken the money. It's, you know, it's a good cause. As you know, not that robbery is ever cool, but really, it, you know, a nonprofit for cancer. You know, come on. That's low. That's pretty low.
You know, I posted this story a few days ago, and I really hated to see this when I first saw it come across the internet, because I've bought, like you just said, Chris, I've bought a bunch of shirts from Shirts for a Cure, and I've donated money to the Sarantha Savio Foundation, and I won an auction about 10 years ago to get tickets for a show and to go backstage and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of a charity that's really kind of that's been close to me. A friend of mine, very close friend of mine, passed away last November from cancer. And to see something like this, I just think is just absolutely sleazy. And I'll just come right out. Fuck those people. I mean, whoever did this, that's just disgusting. I mean, stealing, period, is bad. But to do it from a charity that's doing something that's so good and helping so many people out, that's just really, really low. And I really hope they're able to recover from it. I just, it broke my heart to see that story come across.
Yeah, I guess, well, I mean, hindsight's always 20/20, but I don't know how it was stolen. I mean, like, I hope they just didn't have, like, a big jar, you know, like, and somebody just grabbed a jar. I know a lot of bands.
I would think, you know, it's people who've been around and who have been on tour for a while. So I would think they would, you know, be mindful of how to operate, especially in light of, you know, all the thefts and even the fact that Warped Tour, there's a lot of people that cycle through. You know, I admittedly, I've gotten in once or twice with someone else's pass. So, you know, people can get in and out, you know, relatively easy, depending on the location. So, I mean, I would think that they'd be mindful of that.
Yeah, I mean, I just an advice for bands. I know some bands that actually make a margin and don't lose money on tour, they'll stop at banks, like a bank that is across America, and deposit the money, which is probably pretty smart. You know, as you make money, drop it off at the bank so you can't get stolen, you know. But in hindsight, 2020, I wish this organization the best. Here's another wacky story. This one's probably even wackier. Casey Anderson, who's a Portland musician, has been sentenced for operating a scam to defraud investors out of a West Memphis 3 benefit concert. What happened was, while the West Memphis 3, which were three gentlemen in jail for supposedly killing, I think, one person, right? And they didn't do it. But while they were, and a lot of people thought they did not do it. While they were in jail, people were raising money for them. I know Henry Rollins raised some money for them. I know a couple other people. I think Metallica raised money for them. While they were in jail, this guy Casey Anderson, who is a Portland musician, he basically got $586,000 from investors on the promises that he would do a concert and an album that would benefit the West Memphis 3. He told investors that Tom Petty, Johnny Depp, and Pearl Jam would be at the concert, and that on the album would be Pearl Jam, Bruce Springsteen, Arcade Fire, Lady Gaga, and R.E.M. The tricky part is when he was trying to convince people to give him money, he would make fake emails from, like, these bands' managers and the West Memphis 3 relatives and email it to the investors. He even impersonated John Landau, which is Springsteen's manager. Well, he got caught, and he got sentenced to 4 years in jail. I think it was 4 years in jail. 4 years in jail. And here's what he said. This is Casey Anderson, the guy that got sentenced to 4 years in jail. I am deeply flawed and mentally ill person who made some terrible choices, causing so much emotional and financial damage to others. But I believe I have much to offer my community. I am so sorry for what I've done and want so badly to make it right. I lied to myself and others, and believing those lies, I told myself consistently that whatever was going on with me, I could fix on my own. I convinced myself that this was normal. Weirdly, after I posted, I had a bunch of people that said, "John, you should have listed the albums that he put out." And I've never heard of this guy. I don't think most people really like this guy's music, or a few people do, which I thought was weird, considering that he did these horrible things. I wouldn't say, "Oh yeah, but he makes great music," you know. But more so, why did this guy think he could get away with this? I mean, you hear about these scams every once in a while. After a while, isn't the investor going to be like, "Okay, where's the concert? Where's the album?"
I'd like to know how he got those emails to go across. Like you said that he was sending emails saying that he was John Landau. I mean, how do you get an email? I can't imagine he's sending johnlandau@yahoo.com.
Well, I bet he did. Like that. I bet you that's exactly what he did. Or if he's even clever, he might have, you know, like made it like something called like, you know, like, I don't know, Punk News Management, and then done John at Punk News Management and claimed he was John Landau. That's precisely what he did.
And you fake management agency or whatever.
Right. And you could see how somebody could get duped that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, where it sounds like a third party is involved with the band.
Right,
I'm representing the band on, you know, even though I am a third party. Kind
sure.
Of. Like what he did is he would contact Chris, let's say your investor. Like I'm Casey Anderson. I say, "Hey, I'm throwing a concert. Can you give us $100,000? Bruce Springsteen's going to be there." And then I do john.landau@yahoo.com and email you, Chris, say like the sheet that has like all the stuff you want. What do you call that?
What? A Google Doc? Or I don't know.
No. Like, what bands want? A writer.
Like,
so it seems legit, you know? And it's pretty sneaky.
Okay. Here's the thing. Now, would we all consider this kind of a Ponzi scheme or no?
No, it's not a Ponzi scheme, because a Ponzi scheme is where you promise investments to people below you and the people below them can invest in the people above them. This is just a scam.
I mean, it's just... You know, so that's what I was. Yeah, just I figured it wasn't, but I wasn't sure. And yeah,
hypothetically, a Ponzi scheme, you could never get caught because the investors below you get money from investors below them, so they actually make a profit. So nobody gets angry because the only people that aren't making money are the people at the bottom level. But the people at the bottom level can make money by getting more investors.
You just have to keep moving the money,
right?
And hope that the people never simultaneously go, "We want our money."
Well, no, only the people. See, everyone except the people at the bottom are making money, and the people at the bottom can make money by getting new investors. The problem is you're not actually investing in anything, and that's why it's illegal.
Well, that sounds more like a pyramid than a pyramid.
A Ponzi scheme is a variant of a pyramid scheme.
But regardless, like Mark said, like at what point, you know, was it going to be made right? Because he had to produce an album and a concert. You couldn't just say forever, "Oh, it's coming, it's coming."
Why do you guys think you think this guy owed somebody money? Sounds to me like he owed somebody money.
I'd like to know what happened to that money. I mean, you said it was $500,000. I mean, there was no mention in the story that I saw about what he did with that money. I mean, there was no new record that came out that I saw.
I think he owed somebody money. That's what I mean, I have no idea whatsoever, but this is just me guessing. I think he owed somebody money.
Yeah, probably, because I would imagine that person who then was seeking it probably started digging up some shit and, you know, kind of connected the dots and went from there. You know, how I think it went.
Do you guys know who Elliot Offen is?
No.
He's a guy in New York. Basically, he's absolutely insane now, and I saw him once. But, Chris, you'll probably see him eventually. He's about 65 now. He jogs like 15 miles a day, but he wears a dress.
Was that the guy on the Howard Stern show?
Yeah, that's Elliot Offen.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's dying. But before he went crazy, he was a scam artist. And what he would do is he would buy small amounts of goods from a distributor, like, say, $1,000 worth. And then after he would pay for that, he would call up and do a huge order, like, say, $100,000, right? And then, but he would get that on credit, but then not pay back and then sell the goods for, you know, under sale price. And that's how he made, like, several billion dollars. But my question is, how do these guys not think you're going to get caught? I mean, this kind of scam, you're definitely going to get caught, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he said he was mentally ill. I mean, that's just like...
He just say next so you don't get them. I mean, 4 years? I mean, hypothetically, he might have just pocketed half a mil. Could you do four years in prison for half a mil? Well, I mean, that's a steep price, but people would definitely do that. You know,
that money's got to go somewhere, though. I mean, it's not like he's going to get out in 4 years and suddenly he's got $500,000 in his pocket. I mean, I can't imagine that money's not going to be reimbursed.
I mean, if he's really smart, if he's really smart, he could have done it. And here's how you would do it: is you would get it, you would convert it to cash, or you would liquidate it somehow, hide the money, and then just say you're broke, you know, but then have the actual cash.
No. The way he should have did it is he just should have just spent it, lived it, lived out everything he wanted to, and now do it 4 years. Make it worth it.
What he really should have done is welcome back to the crime podcast. What he really should have done is got the money and then went to another country, just like lived, you know, in like Jamaica or something, or Vietnam, you know, somewhere that's like really cheap.
Or Russia.
Well, not Russia, but like Brazil, you know. I mean, like, or Ecuador. In Ecuador, you can buy a house for $10,000. You know what I mean? So
send us your ideas at podcast@punknews.org.
How to scan West Memphis 3. Send us your ideas at podcast@punknews.org. Let's keep this podcast moving along because we're talking about a lot of crime. Jello Biafra and the Misfits have been added to the 2014 Guar BQ. 2014 Guar BQ, of course, is going to be tinged with sadness because Guar frontman and founder Dave Brocky / Odorous Urung has died earlier this year, apparently of a heroin overdose, so it's pretty sad. The Misfits have been added just as an act to play there, but interestingly, Jello Biafra is going to actually... Well, they're going to do what's called a Viking funeral for Dave Brocky and Odorous, which I don't know if Dave Brocky's body actually is going to be there, but I would guess Odorous Urungus' costume is going to be there. And they're actually going to set the SS boat on fire, and Jello Biafra is going to be the funeral's master of ceremony. And it's actually quite relevant for two reasons. A, the SS boat is what Death Piggy, which was the proto Guar band, would ride on the stage before they played, which is hilarious. Further, Jello Biafra and Guar have a long history. Jello Biafra was in a Guar movie that used in Skullhead Face, but not only that, is he listed Death Piggy's, I think it was their third EP, as one of his favorite records of 1983. So it's a touching, and it's nice that they had Jello Biafra do this. But I mean, I'm bummed out by Dave Brocky being dead, man. I mean, it makes everything associated with Guar kind of sad now.
I'm curious how they're going to carry on. I know that they've got that show scheduled at Riot Fest, and they apparently have plans for the future. I'm really curious how they're going to be able to pull that off.
Right now, they say they're going to have the original Beefcake, which I think is it Chris Bosch? There's been like four main Beefcakes. One, the original Beefcake, the Mighty, is supposed to be handling lead vocals now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to be wow. I mean, it's going to be really different. I mean, Dave Brocky was. I mean. I think any Guar fan would agree that he was one of the main driving forces behind Guar, and it was definitely the face behind that band. I mean, even though he was behind Latex and Liquids and stuff like that. I mean, when you thought of Guar, you thought of Odorous. He was definitely the mouthpiece of that band, and I think people really associated Odorous and Dave, Odorous / Dave, I should say, with Guar. I think it's a really sad thing. It's something I would definitely like to be able to attend. You know, clearly I'm not going to be able to, as I'm kind of way far away. But yeah, I really don't know what to say. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen after this.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel with bands in general, when someone instrumental in the band dies, you know, it's kind of first, obviously, as you know, as a friend. You know, it's really tough to deal with, and you deal on a personal level. But then at the same time, it's like, what do you do with the band? Do you just, you know, some bands just easy. It's just like, let's split. Other bands, it's just, well, you know, we could carry on or whatever. I don't know. It rings kind of awkward to me.
And also, just while you were saying that, I just thought about this. It's just seems kind of strange because even though Guar, I mean, they had a member that died a couple of years ago, and they managed to kind of move on with the whole Guar mythos. Dave and Odorous was such a huge part of Guar. I mean, they're from the very beginning that I really have a very difficult time imagining that band moving on without Odorous being part of the band. So it's going to be very strange moving on. I'm really curious to see how they handle it.
True. But Dave Brocky did make it clear that once he retired, he wanted Guar to continue without him as his legacy. You know what I mean? So I think the choice to continue... It might be unusual or strange, or I guess I don't know how to put it. Like, I don't want to say awkward, but difficult perhaps, because you know, Brocky had so much style and his voice is unique and he's so much unique humor. So without him there, it's a gigantic loss. But I don't think the band continuing insults or diminishes his vision at all. In fact, I think it actually is a tribute to him because he explicitly wanted the band to continue. So honestly, like if he didn't make that statement, I probably wouldn't go see Guar again because it would make me too sad. But because he explicitly said he wanted Guar to continue after he stopped doing it, I'm probably going to go see Guar the next time they come around. And but honestly, I don't think it's going to be quite as fun as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be very different. It's going to be very, very different. As a longtime fan, it's going to be something that I think it's going to take some time to get used to.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, I wish Guar the best, and I hope it's cool. I'm glad that we're able to get Jello Biafra to do this, because really, I think Jello Biafra is probably the most fitting guy to do the tribute, you know, so. So let's wrap up tonight's podcast with a wacky story. This one's good. Morrissey's former bodyguard, Bradley Stein, is suing Morrissey. The basis of the suit is that Bradley Stein alleges that Morrissey told Stein to, quote, hurt the operator of the Morrissey fan site, Morrissey-Solo.com. Stein said that after he refused to hurt the operator of the fan site, Morrissey fired him. So essentially what Stein is saying is that Morrissey, when it took out a hit on the operator of Morrissey fan site, Morrisseysolo.com, and when Stein didn't do it, he got fired. Just so the Punk News listeners know, the main Morrissey fan site is TrueToYou.net, which Morrissey is a big fan of and contributes to. The other anti-Morrissey fan site is Morrisseysolo.com, which actually, the guy that runs it is a guy named, I think, David Sang. And he's a big Morrissey fan too, but Morrissey hates him because, like, he's almost like paparazzi, you know? So anyway, Morrissey denied that he ever took out a hit on this David Sang. Here's what Morrissey said. I wish I could read it in Morrissey's site. I cannot admit to actually knowing Bradley Stein. Yes, I am aware that he is South African and that he lives in Los Angeles and that he has walked off 3 Morrissey tours, which really is his own business, not mine. My personal involvement with him has been zero, and he has certainly never been head of security on any Morrissey tour. I am aware of the false story he has placed on various news sites, wherein he claims I asked him to hurt, kill David Sang. Although Stein's story lends itself to its own ridicule, I must say, I feel I must say to those who have not yet worked it out, this story is a vexatious lie. I love Morrissey's grammar, vexatious lie. It is common knowledge that I dislike the Solo website, and I am aware that all the opinions posted on the site are controlled or written by David Sang, and that David Sang will give maximum and inexhaustive publicity to anything said in the negative about me. This is a general truth that most people accept about Solo. It is nothing new, and I have long since learned to accept it. The very idea that I would ask a complete stranger, Bradley Stein, to physically attack David Sang surely cannot register with any sane person as being likely. As mildly irritating as David Sang may be, he is not someone who troubles me enough to even bother with. The shabby truth of the drama is that David Stein has been trying to extract money from what he terms the Morrissey Tour, and he has failed. He is now desperate, and this story is his latest escapade to gain someone's attention. What he is telling the world is that, as a music venue security officer, anyone who works with him in the future should expect the same harassment and persecution as he is now, mysteriously wielding my way. It is beyond belief, and it is shocking that someone who makes claims of professionalism would lower himself to this level. And then here's the kicker. Please note that Bradley Stein's statement is now in the hands of the Los Angeles Police Department and is subject to both criminal and civil action. I gotta say, boys, the fact that Morrissey handed this over to the cops, I gotta say, I think that basically doesn't prove, but almost proves, that this David Stein hitman story is fake, is false.
Mark, I believe this is when you go, when you tell us how much you hate Morrissey.
That I say it or that John says it?
No,
I like Morrissey. I think Morrissey's great.
No. I think Mark, we were on a previous podcast where we talked about Morrissey.
Oh man, I can't stand Morrissey. I really, really can't. And honestly, hearing this almost makes me want it to be true that he's just like, yeah, that's right. I'm just fuck you. I want to send a hit out on you. I mean, that almost makes me want to like Morrissey in a way, but God damn, I can't stand Morrissey.
Why? Why do you hate him so much?
I've never liked him. I've never liked the Smiths. I never liked Morrissey. I had a roommate in college that loved Morrissey. And as much as I love my friend, They just irritate me. I don't know what it is about him. It's his attitude. It's his smugness. It's his holier than thou.
See, that's why I love him though, because he's not. He's such a drama queen. He's not a nice guy. That's why I love him. You know.
Oh God. Fuck Morrissey.
I love that Mark hates Morrissey for being Morrissey. I love that. I enjoyed it so much. It's just. I don't know.
Morrissey makes me want to eat chicken wings and hamburgers.
Yes. Yes, please upload a video and send it to Morrissey Soho.
There's that great Robert Smith quote. It's like, if Morrissey told me not to eat meat, then I would eat meat. That's how much I hate Morrissey.
Right on, Robert Smith.
That's like my favorite quote ever.
God, I love The Cure that much more right now.
I'm in the boat that I don't think this story is true, but I mean, is there anyone else who could have such ridiculous stories surround him between blaming the opening act, for, you know, canceling the rest of his tour? He canceled 3 tours and all this nonsense. I mean, just nobody who can, I mean, just TMZ. This just screams TMZ. That's all I can think of.
Don't you understand? He's got a thorn in his side.
it's been a banner year for wacky. It's been a banner year for wacky Morrissey stories. I love him. I love wacky Morrissey stories. I love the hijinks that he's constantly getting himself into. Like let's go over the wacky Morrissey stories from this year.
The hijinks make it sound like he's in a Scooby Doo cartoon or something.
He is constantly getting himself involved in like this bullshit, and it only makes me love him that much more because he's such a ridiculous character, and fundamentally he's a great artist, I think. But like there's this story, then like he canceled his 4th tour in a row for blaming the opening act for getting him sick, and then she had to like prove with a doctor's note that she had allergies so she couldn't have gotten him sick, you know. And then before that, like, another band said that he made them stop their gig because their sound was bleeding through, and he denied that. And there was like one other wacky Morrissey story from this year, and that's this year alone. So, man, I love Morrissey. I love this, but I don't think that he took out a hit on anybody. It just seems, honestly, I think the guy suing him is kind of in some real hot water right now.
We need like a top 10 Morrissey countdown.
We do. Listen, I'll put together a top 10 wacky Morrissey story content, and we'll do it again on a podcast.
Yeah.
So let's play a tune, and then we'll wrap up this bad boy. This is a tune by a band called Funeral Cone. I didn't know anything about this band before I saw them live. I saw them in the Golden Tea House in Philadelphia. And actually, last week I talked about Bad Canoes. This band played after Bad Canoes, and I love Bad Canoes is one of the best first times I've ever seen a band ever. Then this band, Funeral Cone, comes out. I thought they were so fantastic, so great. It's kind of, I would describe it as party goth hardcore. They've got a 7-inch and a cassette tape out. The cassette tape is a live cassette tape, and honestly, I actually like it a little bit better, even if the sound quality's not that great. Like, it's a better representation of what they're actually like. But I'm going to play something from the 7-inch just because, like, the sound quality's better. This is a track called Foil Hats by Funeral Cone off their 7-inch called Funeral Cone.
She'll get the foil and shoot an X-ray to wreck control of my brain. I want to live, release protection. Beatlemania is mind control. Started music, my middle name. We intelligent and we control. Went through the dark snow in the winter. I'll ask the wall as a child now.
And that wraps up this week's Punk News Podcast. Mark, thanks for being here. Thanks for hating on Morrissey, even though I think he's great.
Thanks, guys. It's always a good time.
Chris, where do you stand on Morrissey? Thanks for, well, Chris, thanks for being on the podcast. You didn't really say where you stand on Morrissey. Where do you stand?
I don't really listen to him or Smiths that much, but
feel the hate, Chris.
But I do enjoy,
give into the dark side.
I enjoy Mark's hate, and you know, there's just so much nonsense associated with him. I have no desire to really, you know, venture into the land of Morrissey. I think that's
feelings. You know them to be true.
I will fly over the airport, so I'm good. You know, I'll pass.
Well, this is Johnny G, the only guy that says Morrissey. I mean, he's not a nice guy, and he says a lot of bullshit stuff, but I think he makes great music, and I think he's hilarious, and I just think his ridiculousness is just wonderful. So thanks again for listening to the Morrissey podcast.
If you have
I wanted to talk. We got to talk about this, actually. I wanted to talk about this. Like, so there's two Morrissey fan sites. We should have talked about it earlier, but what are you going to do? There's two Morrissey fan sites. There's True to You, which Morrissey likes, and then there's Morrissey Solo, right, run by this guy called David Tseng. And it's a fan site. Like, it talks about how much, like, he likes Morrissey and stuff. And a lot of people read it. But Morrissey says he hates David Tseng. If you, like Chris, what's your favorite band?
All right. Let's go Bouncing Souls.
Okay. Let's say you had a Bouncing Souls fan site. And a Bouncing Souls said, we hate Chris Barrett. Would you still continue your Bouncing Souls fan site? Isn't that, like, a really weird dynamic?
I'd become a very sad human being. And I would crawl back and beg for forgiveness, probably. I would not want them to hate me by any stretch of the imagination.
So you understand this David Tseng's dynamic, that even though Morrissey hates him, he wants Morrissey to love him. That's why he needs to use the fan site.
But, you know, maybe David Morrissey. Maybe David, maybe David Tseng has this weird complex where he feels if he hates me enough, he'll love me. You feel me on that?
I actually think you might have hit the nail on the head, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Like even if Morrissey hates him, Morrissey knows that he exists, and that's like enough. You know what I mean?
Oh, God, he gets off on that one.
Right, exactly. Mark, when are you starting the third Morrissey fan site where you talk about how much you hate him, and then Morrissey says, I couldn't give a shit about Mark Little.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. I'm going to register this week.
What's it going
to be called? But I need people to send me a name because I really don't, because True to You, that's gold. I can't take that.
Well, so I totally need
suggestions.
I don't even know what that's a reference to. I guess this song. I really don't know what that's a reference to.
Wait, I have a better idea.
Okay, I've got an idea here. Morrissey put a thorn in my side.com.
Mark, I have a better idea. Just open up a store and have Morrissey's likeness. And, you know, maybe you can make, like, corn dog stands, buffalo chicken wing holders, you know, like Morrissey
barbecue.
Morrissey barbecue. You know, Morrissey rib sauce.
Well, there you go. This is the barbecue podcast, the crime podcast, the Morrissey solo podcast. Thanks again for listening. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.